breakdancing will become an official sport in the 2024 Paris Games.
Hi, I'm Sunny Choi. I'm a breaker and the first American woman to qualify for my sport in the Olympics.
Please give it up for Olympic athlete Sunny Choi.
You know, I had heard about breaking going to the Olympics like months before I'd even really considered it at all. My initial reaction was like, no way, I'm not giving up my current life for this. Like, I've worked my whole life to get into this corporate career, and I want to have a family, and I want to have a home and kids and all these things, and I would be putting all that on the back burner to just go chase this like childhood dream of being in the Olympics. Especially, I was like, what if I fail? What if all this is for nothing? And backstage, while I was kind of warming up, and I see my four nieces, and all four of them are just like so excited, all decked out in like Team USA. It's not only like having my family there, but also for them to see a woman in sport doing something untraditional.
I have to ask this because you're an Olympian breakdancer and I'm Australian. Ray gun. That's just where I'm going to start and stop the question. Well, Sunny, thanks so much for joining us on The Ginny Show. I was fascinated to learn about your story, especially how you were climbing up the corporate ladder, working in marketing. Did any of your work colleagues know that you could breakdance?
Yeah, so many of them did. I mean, I only accepted jobs that would give me the flexibility to travel and like work as I traveled, because I was going international often to compete. So, you know, initially, I mean, people would be like, where are you going? Like, what, you know, you make small talk so people kind of find out. And then when they start realizing like I'm traveling abroad to compete, then they're like, oh, she's actually serious about this. And so everywhere I went, there was no way to hide it, because I was always in like different countries, working from like Japan, from, I don't know, Budapest, just around the world, different time zones. I'd be answering in the middle of the night and people are like, what are you doing? There was no way around it because it was such a big part of my life.
So I'm curious, at like holiday parties or like office parties, did they expect you to be the one in the middle breakdancing?
Oh my gosh, yes. And actually there was one, and I'm not going to say what company or who, but there was one party I went in a dress and heels intentionally, because I actually personally don't like being asked to dance. I think a lot of people, and to no fault of theirs, you know, a lot of breaking that you see is done in the streets. And it's like, some of it doesn't look super athletic, but people don't think about the risk of injury and how much warm up that you actually need and how difficult it is. And so it's almost like minimizing it and downplaying it if I just like walk out there and do whatever. And it's like, yes, it's also a dance. So yes, I can dance and I can do an element of it if I wanted. But yeah, I don't just like go out there and just like spin on my head with no warm up. Like that's actually dangerous. And so I went to this holiday party intentionally, and I actually was a skirt and heels. And I was like pressured to dance by several people. And I was like, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm intentionally dressed this way because I don't like being asked to dance. And so, yeah, sometimes there's a lot of pressure. Most of the time, people respect it. And I think especially as they kind of went to the Olympics and people started seeing it a little bit or understanding that it's a sport, then it's like, oh, this isn't just some, like, little dance you can just do. It's not, like, something that you can just, like, walk into the middle and just, like, move your hands a little bit. And so, yeah, I think some of it was, like, education and explaining. And then some of it, you know, as it became more popular and people were seeing it, they were like, oh. But there's definitely a lot of that. Or a lot of people, you know, at parties, they're like, oh, you can dance, right? And I'm like, I can dance a very specific way. I'm not sure that this is the kind of dancing you expect to see to this kind of music.
Do you think the subway breakdancers have painted the impression that breakdancing is just so easy?
So, I mean, the whole point is you're supposed to make it look easy, right? So they're doing their job, but what they're doing is extremely difficult. And I think people do take it for granted because you see it everywhere. And you're just like, oh, this like kid off the street can do it. But it's like, but you can't. We can't. Most of us can't. Just because they're a kid off the street doesn't mean that they're not extremely talented.
You're absolutely right. I do think we take it for granted because it's so available and accessible on like literally on your morning commute. You can have a coffee and a side of breakdancing on the N train. It's great. Yeah. N train in particular gets the most breakdancing I've found. Moving on to your transition from the corporate world into breakdancing, can you walk us through the moment, Sunny, where you were like, I'm ready to go all in on this and put it all on the line?
That was like many, many months of mulling this concept over in my mind. You know, I had heard about breaking going to the Olympics like months before I'd even really considered it at all. My initial reaction was like, no way, I'm not giving up my current life for this. I've worked my whole life to get into this corporate career, and I want to have a family, and I want to have a home and kids and all these things. And I would be putting all that on the back burner to just go chase this like childhood dream of being in the Olympics for breaking, you know, this like brand new sport of all things. And so, yeah, initially I just like completely shut it down. And then as time went on, it started creeping in into like my daily thoughts, and it just sat in the back of my mind. And I was, can I make this happen? Do I want to make this happen? And what's stopping me? Months and months of this, of just like being in this limbo. And then I was like, you know what? I'm only in limbo because I haven't really shut it down. Like I really am considering this. And so what is it that's stopping me? And I realized it was just me being scared to fail and me being scared to actually allow myself to dream and allow myself to pursue a dream that was very personal. I had done so many things in my life that were just kind of prescribed to me by society, right? Like just checking the boxes of being successful. And I realized like, I didn't want any of that. I mean, yes, I want a house. I want family. I do want these things, but I never did anything just for me. I had shut down so many of my own personal dreams throughout my life to pursue something that kind of externally looked successful or would, I guess, set me up for like a kind of more perceived success, right? You know, I was like, when am I ever going to get this chance again? It's literally a dream I've had since I was a baby. Like I was 3 years old asking to go to the Olympics. We shut that down pretty early. That didn't work out, and I'm getting a second chance. So yeah, I remember sitting in the car one night, I think it was before practice, and I just burst out in tears. And I was like, I can't do this to myself again. I can't keep crushing my own dreams to pursue this life that I don't even want. So that was the day I decided, I'm going to make this happen. It means I'm going to quit my job. It means I'm going to change everything. And worst case scenario, I can go back. But best case scenario, I don't. And so I just decided like then and there that day, this is going to happen.
And you've never looked back since?
I mean, I've had moments of doubt, but I'm going to say never looked back since, because I don't know that that truly exists, that you never, ever once doubt a decision. There's been tough moments. There's been moments where that bank account looks a little low and I'm like, do I want to go back now? Things get uncertain, things get difficult. There are moments where I question, but I've never been happier. I've never been more fulfilled. So in that sense, no, I haven't looked back. But, you know, there've been flashes where I thought maybe I messed this up.
When you do take big risks, there are exactly risks to consider and to contemplate and to look back on. So I think you're right. I'm going to reframe those questions from now on, because I do, even with me in my career, I've looked back to see how far I've come, but there are these pangs or these moments of, shit, what have I done? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I love also like reading about your story, how when you said, yes, I'm going to go all in to breakdancing, you signed Nike as a sponsor. What was it like being sponsored by such an iconic brand?
Well, luckily I'm still sponsored, actually. So that's good news. I was working with somebody at the time, Carl Paoli, who he was like a career life mentor sort of thing, coach, and then turned into like working through contracts and relationship brand relationships with me as well. Talking to him, and he was like, all right, what brands do you want to work with? And the very first thing I blurted out was Nike. Like, I always knew, I've always liked the brand. I've been a fan of the stance that they take in sport. And especially now, they've really doubled down on like really supporting women in sport, really supporting diversity, giving voices to people, to like different voices that, you know, we often don't hear from. And so early on, I was like, this is it. Funny enough, I actually thought like there was no chance, because they already had a woman breaker signed to their roster. And how many women US breakers can you sign to your roster when there's only going to be two at the games? Well, lo and behold, a couple months later, some things happened, and then they reached out and we started having conversations. And then next thing you know, they actually went dark for a little bit and then came back, and we did it again. And then 6 months later, I was sponsored. And I mean, it was for me super exciting, because I had financially planned to not have any, you know, income for a while. But it was getting a little tight. I was getting pretty nervous, and it came in like at the perfect moment. And honestly, it's been a dream relationship, because they've really supported me in the things that I want to do and given me the platform to voice the things that I care about. They are super supportive of me talking about mental health, and they give me a lot of like platforms and talks and Q&As and things where I get to talk about that, and they're really supportive of it. Women in sport, being Asian, like all these things that matter to me. And so that's been really wonderful. I mean, I like the clothes. So it's just been a really, really great partnership. And like, this shouldn't be like a marketing spiel, but honestly, like it's been really wonderful to work with them.
Mental health is something that you just mentioned in your answer, and in previous interviews that you've done, you mentioned just how much your body has gone through and your mind too, right? Your body's gone through a lot. How's it impacted your relationship with your body, really?
Oh, good question. I don't think I've ever been asked anything like that in this way. I mean, my relationship with my body has changed so much over the years. So growing up, I was a gymnast and I was around a bunch of women who were incredible, who were really, really strong. And, you know, at that time, I feel like the information we had around our bodies and strength that was very different from the information we have today, and the rhetoric around our bodies and what women should look like and how we talk about ourselves was so different back then. So I really struggled back then with how I looked. There was this ideal body type as a gymnast. While there were so many others, you wanted to be that like tall, slender, elegant, beautiful, not necessarily tall, medium height, you know, slender, elegant gymnast. And I was this like short, stocky, kind of more powerful girl. And, you know, I really struggled with that. I struggled with the fact that my legs were bigger. I struggled with the fact that I didn't have a waist. Definitely got more of like that broad shoulder, narrow hips kind of thing. I hated my body growing up. And also being Asian, I was told that I needed to be slender and I wasn't. So I get to college and I'm not doing gymnastics and I start breaking and my body is changing. You know, you do things in college, you drink, you don't eat healthy, and I'm not working out, I'm struggling. And then I start breaking. And breaking is just so different from anything I'd ever done before because it's a creative outlet and it's a form of expression. It's about exploring who you are and it's about developing your character, like in real life, but then also through the dance. So I think over the years, really doing the digging and figuring out who I am and how I express myself and the amazing things my body can do, all of a sudden, like what I look like didn't matter so much anymore. It was about how I felt while I was moving and about that like pure expression of like joy and freedom that you can manifest through the dance. I think putting aside the emphasis on how I look and really making it more about how I feel really changed everything. And that's not to say I don't wake up sometimes in the morning and I look in the mirror and I'm like, ew, I feel gross today. But it's changed so much because it's so much less about like, ooh, my legs are big. But it's like, my legs are strong, you know? And I think that that is also kind of a societal trend around the way that we talk about women, which I love. Because I do think it really is more about what our bodies can do for us and not how they look.
Thank you for going into that, Sunny, because the fact that breakdancing is kind of a little different from what we traditionally know about dance. Like when you see ballet or if you see ballroom dancing, it's very different because breakdancing can be, like you said, expression. Sometimes it's also like political statements or sometimes it's done to shock you in what the human body can do. In terms of your mental health, how have you managed to stay mentally strong? Obviously, coming from the Olympics, it's a high intensity, you know, you got the most elite minds and bodies in the world competing. How do you manage your mental health in that?
I think managing, or what I've learned about managing my mental health, is that managing it doesn't mean you're trying to like keep this baseline all the time, but it's really like being okay with the ebb and flow. It's about like being along for the roller coaster. Because the roller coaster is inevitable and trying to make that a straight line doesn't make sense. And me being the control freak I am, I always wanted to be consistent. I never understood how some people wake up and they're happy all the time. You know, the funny thing is actually, like on the outside, everyone thinks I'm super bubbly and happy all the time. I'm not. Right. Let's be real, you know? It's really a roller coaster. And I think when I accepted, it's going to be a roller coaster. And this is the process that we call life. It made it a lot easier. It's not like there aren't days where I have a hard time accepting that. But I think that's really changed the way that I view my mental health, especially as an athlete, because those moments where you're training really, really hard and your body is spent and your mind is spent, those are the days where like typically I guilt myself and I'm like, but I should be in the gym today. Like, let me just go try. And then I kind of dig the hole deeper and deeper and deeper. And then next thing you know, I can't get out of bed. Learning to be kind to myself, learning that this is the process, learning that sometimes foregoing a training session here and there is just not the end of the world. And just kind of accepting this is it has been really helpful.
That's amazing. You talked about like embracing the ebbs and flows of the day-to-day, because I think society and social media in particular portrays this, oh, you know, everything's high vibes and let's keep this going. The one thing that you just said there about embracing the ebbs and flows and being kind to yourself, I'd imagine on an athlete level, the self-negotiation that you have to do day-to-day is so much more intense than me. Like, oh, I'm here in bed with my cat. She's cute. I'm not leaving. So can you talk me through your self-negotiation and how you get yourself up and about?
You know, it used to be I didn't give myself a choice. It was like if I had a schedule, I stuck to it no matter what. And you know the phrase, like a tree that doesn't bend breaks. So that's kind of what happens when, or that's what happened to me at least, when I used to approach life that way. It's like I'd go, and then crash. And then I'd come back, go, and crash. And it just got to the point where the crashes were getting lower and lower and it wasn't sustainable and I had to figure something out. Obviously, I'm pretty vocal about like I do see a therapist and like we've worked through a lot of this and we're still working on it, or I'm still working on it. But I think now the daily dialogue is more about where is my internal battery right now? Do I have the energy to do the next thing? Or do I need to pivot a little bit to refuel? Maybe I just adjust it because my battery might be a little bit low. Or do we just skip it and be kind and show up the next time at 100 instead of showing up for the next 3 weeks at 20%, 30%? It's hard because it's all gray area. Sometimes I get it wrong. Sometimes I think like, all right, like today, yoga's going to be the thing. I'm going to go in. I'm going to feel amazing after because I always feel amazing after. But I miscalculated and I thought I had more energy and I come out and I'm just like, that was the worst decision ever. You know, and that happens. I'm learning.
Yeah.
But I think my current phase or the thing that I'm doing now is before I do a task, especially if I'm sensing that I'm starting to kind of drain that battery, my internal battery, is to check in with myself before my activities to say, hey, do I really have the energy and do I need this? Is this what's going to make me better? Or is this going to drain me further and get me to a point where I can't come back? So that's kind of how I approach things now. And it does require you to be very, very honest with yourself, because there are times where I just want to be lazy, but I know I have it in me. And on those days, I'm like, all right, let's be real. I can do this. I just don't want to. So on those days, I get up and go, you know, most of the time. But yeah, there are also other days where it's like, I really don't have it in me and I really do need to stay home, or I really do need it. Maybe it's like taking that workout and notching it down like 50% and making it more like mobility focused versus like a heavy lift, whatever that looks like. Maybe it's like going on a walk outside with my dog instead of going for a run, you know, whatever that is. But that's been really helpful for me recently. And I definitely recommend other people try it because yeah, it definitely helps to keep that. It helps to mitigate some of those like really low lows in that little, you know, the roller coaster.
Absolutely. You've talked us through some of the things that you do to keep yourself going or moving forward and showing up for yourself as an athlete too. I'm curious what your daily rituals and routines are. So, because you can hear about rituals of athletes, like I listen to Calm and LeBron goes through his routine, but I imagine your routine's very different from LeBron, given that he's an NBA player. But what is a breakdancer's routine? I've never found it on the internet. Could you tell me?
Oh my gosh, we're also, I mean, but everybody's so different. How could you ever find anyone and be like, oh, this is for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
I know. And I like, I actually am not big on routine. I'm not somebody who has like a morning ritual. I'm just realizing this now, but I think I'm like kind of intuitive. I just do what I feel like I need. Before, I think it was like I just ignored everything and I just kept it moving. And now it's more like I do what's needed. And then I kind of like just check in with myself. I think I haven't been doing this as much recently, but what I was doing before quite a bit was taking these like short little 10 second pauses between activities to check in with myself. So it's literally just stop everything for 10 seconds, close my eyes, take a couple breaths, take a couple cleansing breaths after, and then just be like, all right, how am I feeling? And then from there, decide what I'm going to do next. That kind of helps to dictate what's coming next. And that would be sort of like a ritual. But my days actually are all over the place. Some days I wake up and immediately, I mean, some days like 5:30 this morning, my dog woke me up. She had to pee. So we did that. And then I couldn't fall asleep. And then I laid in bed forever and then just like planned some random things and then decided not to go to the gym in the morning, decided to go in the afternoon. Like, I'm a little chaotic now, which is funny to say because I used to be so regimented. But I think that's like that process of embracing the ebbs and flows. And right now I'm just in a place where I don't have a lot of structure in my life and never thought I'd be okay with that. But here I am saying this is my life and I'm actually really happy with it. I don't really know what other I don't have that many kind of daily rituals or anything like that.
I think that's amazing that you shared that because I know some people aren't regimented or like they're very much like what you said, intuitive. They kind of go with the flow and that works for them. And I think that is also okay, embracing that kind of ebb and flow of life as well. I want to kind of fast forward to, or rewind, I guess would be a more appropriate word, the Olympics. Being on a boat with all of those athletes, LeBron's at the front. There's like at least three greatest of all time athletes on that vessel with you. You see the Eiffel Tower. What is three-year-old Sunny thinking? That must have been quite a moment for you.
Oh, man. I mean, that moment, it was so epic because it was raining. It was gray. You have these like incredible athletes. Literally like the pinnacle of like human athleticism on this boat. And it felt like we were like charging into battle on this boat. They've got the flag. They're holding it at the helm, you know? I really felt like I was in a movie. That like gray, you have that like ambiance, that energy of like mystery. You don't really know what's about to happen, but it's going to be intense. You know, probably like what Hans Zimmer, I think that's the really epic orchestra kind of music. And like, this is what I was hearing in my head as this is all happening. One of the most epic moments of my life. And it's part of it is because I built it up in my head of what this was going to be. The thing I felt most there was this sense of pride. Throughout the games, I often felt gratitude. But in that moment, it was like pride to represent Team USA. I was proud of myself for having made the decisions to get me onto that boat that day, proud to be amongst some of the best athletes in the world on that small little vessel, kind of parading in front of other people. You know, I'm somebody who actually is like kind of to myself. I don't really like to attract attention to myself. Like even on the boat while I like really wanted to be there, most of the time I was kind of like back under the eaves because I've never been that person who wants to kind of be out in the front. But there that day, I was like, I'm really proud of what I've done, what everyone here has done to get here. And so, yeah, that was one of the best memories I have from the Olympics for sure.
What was that whole experience like? Were you allowed to have good pastries in Paris? Was the Team USA dietitian like, do not go into that patisserie, Sunny? I would be the most undisciplined athlete if I was sent to Paris for the Olympics. I don't think they'd be like, Ginny, you're not allowed on the boat. But what was it like being in Paris at that time?
I mean, you heard about the chocolate muffins. Like, they were famous for a reason and all the athletes were eating them. I actually didn't get to try it there. So they recreated them later and I got to have it. At the time, I had a lot of, like, self-imposed dietary. There weren't really restrictions, but preferences because my body just reacts to a lot of food differently. And so it's like, for me, wheat flour can be problematic sometimes. Sugar is almost always problematic. Dairy is always problematic. So food in France was not my best friend, at least like normal kind of French food. However, we were staying at the High Performance Center and they had all of the chefs from the US Olympic Training Center flown in. And so they had meals that were specifically made for the athletes. So I ate there almost every single day. And the chefs also knew me and knew my specific dietary restrictions. So oftentimes they would have a plate set aside for me because like I didn't eat meat at the time. because of some of the other restrictions, like I couldn't have some of the sauces that they had. And so, yeah, they always had something that worked for me. So it was great because I often also got like a fresh plate of food. It wasn't just like the food that had been sitting up for all the other athletes, but they're like, oh, we know Sunny's coming around this time. So we'll make sure that, you know, it's like basically a ready-made hot meal just for her, which is great. So I feel like I got special treatment, but that made it a little bit easier. Right after the games, oh my gosh, I had so many pastries and I just was like, you know what? I haven't had any of this in so long. So like there's one night, I think we ordered from like two bakeries, a pizza place, an Italian spot. Like we just, because it was my whole family, pretty big family was there. So we just ordered from like three or four spots and just was like, just went to town.
That's amazing. What was it like to share that with your family? I mean, a full circle moment for you, like you were three and I can imagine some cultural things show up when you're trying to pursue a non-conventional or a path least explored. What was that like experiencing the Olympics with them?
To be honest, in the beginning of the process, I was very scared that my parents were not going to come around. And especially I was like, what if I fail? What if all this is for nothing? And, you know, there was a lot of fear around that for me. And, you know, they knew that I danced, they knew that I traveled, but, you know, I was still getting the pressure of like, when are you going to get married? When are you going to have kids? When are you going to settle down? You know, like the classic parent questions that you get. And I was constantly like, I'm still breaking. I'm still just like enjoying myself. And now I'm quitting my job. And so it was tough, but because there was kind of a long lead up, it's like everyone had time to come around in their own time, you know, on their own timeline. And so like my mom came to an event, I think this was back in like 2022, 2023. So at least a year out from the games, first breaking event she ever went to. I happened to win. It was like a US Nationals kind of event. And she got to experience that. And like, she loved it. My brothers had always been supportive. And then like my dad kind of came around when he saw my name in the news all the time and I was on TV and stuff like that. So that, you know, there was all this like external validation that I think made it a little bit easier for my family. So by the time of the games, everyone was like, we're on board. So having them all there, all my nieces were there, my like kind of support team. So everyone that had kind of come along the journey with me. So like my massage therapist, my strength coach, Carl, who I just mentioned earlier, who we worked from the beginning on kind of like mental and career stuff. And then he kind of started working with my brand relationships as well. He was there just like having everybody, my boyfriend, everyone all there together to support. My heart was just so full in a way that I never felt before in my life, you know, because I think my whole life while I had felt supported, it was always like, but I could do something better. And that day I felt celebrated for just being there, for being all together, for being me, you know, because that's what this dance is about. And so that felt like really, really amazing.
That's amazing, Sunny. And just to clarify, that time that you went out after the Olympic Games with your family, did you wear a dress and high heels? Because you're like, guys, I'm not dancing for you anymore.
My family knows, fortunately, so I can just wear sweats.
Not to ask you.
Not gonna ask me to dance.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful moment. And I think like it came full circle for you too, like little three-year-old Sunny, to be in Paris too, to celebrate that with your entire family. And what an experience for your nieces. The pastries they would have gotten. Like, forget the pastries they would have gotten at, I don't know how old they are, but I mean, yo, that would have been fun. I know my niece would be like, she would be tripping.
Oh, yeah. It was like the talk of the town in their schools. Like, they were like, we're going to France. And like, they had planned an entire day of just like exploring patisseries and bakeries. One of my nieces was like, I'm just going to have a bread day. And I was like, can you hold that until after I compete? Because I really want to do this with you. Yeah, they were so excited about it. But yeah, I mean, one of my favorite pictures from the games is a photo of me backstage while I was kind of warming up. And I see my four nieces and all four of them are just like so excited, all decked out in like Team USA. It's not only like having my family there, but also for them to see a woman in sport doing something untraditional, but really, really happy in life, you know? So I think for me, like I didn't see this as a potential reality for me when I was growing up. I mean, I did think the Olympics was, but actually pretty early on, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just be a doctor or a lawyer because that's what I'm supposed to do. You know, that Olympic dream kind of died pretty early. So to be able to kind of like solidify that for somebody else and show them like this is possible, I think was really special too.
I've been thinking about this too, because I can relate similarly that, you know, I could have been a doctor, not could have been, I was expected to follow a certain part. I don't think I could have been a doctor. You would not want me operating on you. But I would think about things like, okay, if I explored the conventional path, right? Obviously, that's what was expected from generations before me. That's what's expected right now. But I want to go, when everybody zigs, I want to zag. And now I have a niece who's growing up seeing this. You have four nieces growing up, being able to wear Team USA gear, cheering you on at the Olympics, competing in a sport that was just introduced into the games. Do you kind of find it ironic that, oh, someday they're going to take this for granted because this is going to be the new norm? You know, do you kind of think about that too? It's like, oh, damn. So you guys, this is going to be normal for you. Well, I have to go through all this shit to get here.
It was funny because one of my, not one of my niece, but like my sister-in-law texted me once and she was like, yeah, they think it's normal to have an aunt that just shows up on TV all the time and is in the Olympics. Like, I often would forget to tell people when I was on TV. Also, just kind of just lost track. So, like, you know, do a Today Show taping and then I forget to ask when it was going to air. And they often would, like, have, you know, the news on. And then Erin, my sister-in-law, would have to, like, hey, when are somebody's on TV, everyone, you know. And they're like, yeah, they think this is normal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do realize that, like, this, in some ways, it's, like, beautiful because it's like makes you know that this is possible. The other thing is like, yeah, I worked so hard for this and you all just think this is nothing.
Exactly. They like expect everybody's aunts to be accessible on TV now. So I wonder what they say to their friends. It's like, your aunt's not on TV. That's not normal. It's like, no, but no, I see that. I see what you said. That's a beautiful acknowledgement from your family too, Sunny. I'm wondering, other than the moments that you've shared with me, with your family in Paris, what was your main highlight from the Olympics?
I mean, the highlight that I always give is that moment being there with my family. I would say the other, honestly, was just competing. I think in the lead up, I had been so afraid that I was going to let all the voices in my head that have always pushed me to, you know, be the best and do better than everyone else and reach the standard that is like impossible to reach, you know, that standard that we set for ourselves that's, you know, all the way up here and always stays up there no matter how good you get. I was scared that all those voices would get in the way of me being able to actually enjoy myself and actually express myself and be who I am, you know, show the world who I am on the stage. So being there at the games and being backstage, and there was really great music backstage while we were warming up on the practice floor. Just like I was back there dancing and having the time of my life. And there was a lot of people who were kind of in their heads like, oh, I'm going to compete. I need to win. And I was like, oh, today, I don't even care about winning. Like, I'm really here to enjoy myself. I have nothing to prove to myself. I'm just going to go out there and have fun. And I did it. And I feel like, I mean, a lot of people told me, like, we could feel you were having fun. Like, you were the one who had the most fun that day on that stage, like, for sure, hands down. And yeah, I walked off and I had no regrets. And, you know, from day one in breaking, or from very early on in breaking, my goal had always been to be able to express myself without restriction, without all the voices in my head telling me, this is how you need to look, this is how things should be done, this is what's technically correct. And, you know, fitting that mold that I'd always tried to fit. I always had told myself, I don't want to do that. I want to be able to shine. I want to be able to be me, truly, like, authentically me. And so to be able to do that at such a huge event, and be able to kind of like put aside all of the other pressure and all the other expectations and just like show up for myself was probably like, not probably, but like the best feeling ever.
That's amazing, Sunny. I'm so glad that you were just able to show up as yourself and not worry about all the nitty gritty. I have to ask this because you're an Olympian breakdancer. And I'm Australian. Ray gun.
Is that just Ray gun question?
That's it. That's just where I'm going to start and stop the question.
So new sport, right? There's all sorts of ways that people are getting in. And, you know, there is promotion of getting people from different parts of the world and making the sport accessible. Because I think one of the most beautiful things about breaking is that it is actually way more accessible than most sports. Most of us train in community centers. Most of our practice spots are free or like $5. You don't necessarily need a coach. There were people going and competing at the Olympics who didn't have like strength coaches and only got them when the Olympic cycle started and people started funding that process. But like there are people all over the world who dance, you know, so I really appreciate the effort that the organization made to getting some more kind of geographical diversity on the stage. And so having Ray Gunn there, I think just having people to represent other parts of the world is great. I don't think that the world did right by her, because I think she truly was expressing herself in the way that she felt was still breaking for her. And the thing about breaking is there is a lot of like wiggle room in how you want to move. Yes, we have foundation, but she has the foundation and we saw that, you know, she has the basics down. She wasn't the highest skilled dancer there, you know, and she herself would admit that, but she went and did her thing. And so I don't think it was fair that like everybody picked on her. You know, you have athletes in all sports who go in and in that first, like the first heat, like they don't do well. In breaking, it just looks different. You don't take a picture of the last like sprinter in the line and poke fun at them and like, look how far back they are.
Right. So you felt from that lens, she was done hard by, like she was like made fun of because of those reasons. I didn't actually see it that way. That's actually really interesting because nobody knows who the eighth place person is in some, they get no coverage at all.
Yeah. And she just got a ton. And I also think it was really unfair because so many people were really, really mean to her. And I don't think she deserved that because I do think she went and gave it her best. And she did what she thought was going to be best for kind of representing the sport, just as we all did. You know, I do think in some senses, like there was some good that came out of it because all of that press that we got from it, while there was a lot of hate, the haters were always going to hate. We were never going to win them over. But there were also a lot of people who watched it and they were like, this couldn't be it. And they actually watched the entire event and they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, so we also got some like converts that way. You just got to make the best of the situation. I just think it was really unfair. I think it was really mean. I mean, that's what social media does today. You have a lot of just mean people behind keyboards and that's what happened. And I don't think that it was right. I think it's really unfortunate, but you know, it is what happened.
I got a lot of my non-Australian friends just messaging me on Instagram, like, can you explain this? I'm like, I didn't know what to say. But now I'm going to send them this interview, Sunny, because this is, I think you've explained it perfectly. So thank you for that honest and really detailed answer of that. I think that completely changed my perspective. I didn't see it the way that you explained it, and it totally makes sense. I kind of want to wrap off with a reflective part of your journey. You know the movie Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow? Do you ever have a Sliding Doors moment and think about your life?
I don't know this movie.
So Gwyneth Paltrow is kind of, her life is split into two parts and it's all based on whether she got on this train or not. So if she missed the train, her life goes a certain way. If she gets on a certain train, her life goes another way. So do you have the Sliding Doors moment with your life? If you stayed in the marketing job, wearing dresses and heels to party so you wouldn't have to dance to taking the leap, do you have that thinking sometimes?
All the time. I feel like there were so many moments in my life where I made very specific choices. And I'm not going to say that I got on the wrong train, but I got on the train that was motivated by a reason outside of myself. And then the Olympic train was the train that I got on that put me back on the path to living like a very genuine life. And that's definitely the best train that I've ever taken.
Is it better than the MTA?
Is that even a real question?
I'm like, that was a rhetorical question. You didn't have to think about that one. I know the answer. I know the answer. You're like, are you kidding me? And there's very different break. I mean, they both have break dances. It's just a different train. I get it. Totally.
Yeah. So, yeah. One, you almost get kicked in the face.
Yeah, exactly. Sunny, thank you so much for your time. It's been a joy learning about your journey and all of the insights that you've shared with me. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me. This was really fun.